right? So then you've got to have your investment summary. We talked a little bit about that in the last segment. What are you buying? Why? What's your return on investment? Where's your projections? What are your exit strategies? And your track record, if you have one, you might include that there. And your track record is only pertaining to the things that you do, you've done that are exactly like what you're proposing to do. So if you've only bought single family properties before, you can talk about that in your biography, but it's not, in the eyes of the SEC, part of your track record for multifamily, because that should only be your multifamily properties. So then you have to have a tool that would allow you to keep track of all these people. What are you going to do with all this contact information that you get? Are you going to take your business cards and stick them in a drawer? That's not going to help you. So what you really need to do is to gather and store that contact information in an electronic database that you can access regularly and that you can use to generate an email drip system for your newsletters or for other content that you want to share. And you can use to offer your free educational information. So what if you hadn't touched your database for a few months or a couple months? You might want to say, hey, I've just written a free report on this or that, here's the link. You can download that. So now you have to maintain your relationship. Once you've started that relationship, you've had that first touch, you've got those people into your database, now you have to maintain it by new drip system, informational email blasts, free events reports, and coming up with new topics. So you've got to keep people interested. Think of this like a TV series. You know, we've got to just keep people interested so they keep coming back and they keep looking at you. So now we have all of these tools. What are we going to do with all these tools? How do we convey all of this? You always want to have an introduction. There's always going to be an introduction. You're going to meet somebody for the first time somehow, somewhere. Then you're going to have a follow-up with them, which is more of a one-on-one type of discussion, whether it's on the phone, it could be in person. Could be coffee at a networking event, could be any one of those things, but it's a place for you to get to know that person. And then after that, you are going to be able to make the proposal or the offer to get them to invest with you at some later date. So how do we orchestrate these introductions? Networking opportunities. Chamber of Commerce, philanthropic organizations, real estate investing events, all of those kinds of things. Chance encounters. You know, you should always have your business cards with you. You should always be able to have your business cards available and ready to hand out to somebody when you meet them for the first time. And then orchestrated meetings, and those are those events, those seminars or workshops or things that you invite people to. So the objective at the first meeting is to introduce yourself, exchange contact information, and make a date. But what we're trying to do here is to figure out if there's any interest at all. So you're going to, during that introduction, you're probably going to be using your conversation starter, and you're going to have some further discussion about that. If there seems to be any interest in that, then you're going to exchange contact information. You'll give them your business card. You'll gather their contact information. And then either at that time or after that, you're going to follow up and give them a call and make a date, just like you would if you met somebody in a bar that you were interested in dating. So think of it like that. So on the first date, what are you going to do? Well, the worst date is the one where the person who invited you on the date nonstop talks about themselves. So don't do that. Don't be that person. The best date is the one where the person who invited you is genuinely interested in you and is asking you about yourself, and you get to talk about what you're doing. So think of the investor as that person, that you're interested in them. You want to know about them and their family and their situation and what kinds of other things they've done in their lives, and generate just general conversation to find out if there's any common ground between the two of you. And at some point within that, they're going to reciprocate and ask you about you. And that's where the time that you can talk about yourself and your situation and your business. So that's the exchange of information. During that first date, you really want to be qualifying that investor and finding out if they have a fit within your organization. We'll talk a little bit more about what you should be doing. Determining their suitability to be in your investment. Remember we said that if you were doing 506B offerings, you could include only accredited investors and up to 35 sophisticated investors. So that's something you'll want to try to ascertain during that meeting. If you're doing 506C offerings, you can only bring in accredited investors, so you'd have to verify that. But you wouldn't verify it at that meeting. You would just make a general inquiry. That's the point, is that that meeting, you're just making a general inquiry. Finding common ground, explaining your business. But here's a big one that people forget. You're going to be in business with this person for a very long time. So you want to make sure that whoever you're going to prospectively be in business with is somebody that you like and are interested in and that you feel like would make a good business partner for you as you go forward and you own this property, because there will be challenges along the way, and you want to make sure that when there are challenges and you present them to your investors, that your investors are going to be good business people that are going to try to help you solve those problems. So think about compatibility. If you don't like somebody, don't pursue them as an investor, because you're going to regret it in the long run. And a bad partner, it can ruin your life. It really can. So just think about that. If you like them and you trust them and you believe that they would be a good fit for your organization, then you should pursue the relationship. You also want to provide an investor questionnaire. So how do you determine if somebody is accredited or sophisticated? Well, there's usually a one-page questionnaire that you can get, and they're available online or from various sources, where you can they can check a box saying that they're accredited or they're sophisticated, and you're really just giving them the definition so that they can say qualify themselves. So that's what that investor questionnaire is about. If you're doing the 506C offering, then you're going to take that a step further and you're going to have to seek verification of that. But on the 506B, all they have to do is tell you, and as long as you don't have reason to believe otherwise, then you can accept that at face value. Okay, so while you're conducting your interview on your first date with your prospective investors, you really need to be kind of analyzing how they can fit into your organization. And there's multiple opportunities and ways for them to do that. One of them might be to come in as a co-manager or part of your management team. Well, why might you want to invite somebody into your management team? Well, maybe they know a lot of investors. Okay. Or maybe they have a line on deals. So they can bring something. Now, the other thing is that for every one of your deals, if you're getting an institutional loan, someone has to be able to guarantee that note. So if you're buying small balance loans, so where the loan balances, I think the limit on Freddie Mac loans is now $750,000 or less, then you're probably going to need to be able to bring in a loan guarantor. And that's somebody who can sign, has the personal net worth to guarantee that loan. If your loan balance is above $750,000, then you can start qualifying for a Freddie Mac or a Fannie Mae loan, where you might not have to do a recourse loan. That's a recourse loan is one where you have a personal guarantee. So, but you still have to have somebody who has the net worth to be able to sign what are called carve-outs. And the carve-outs are things like bad boy provisions if somebody does something illegal at the property, or environmental conditions of the property that are discovered after you acquire it. So that's something to consider, is that you're going to need some people with some high net worth that can come in at the management level in order for you to be able to get your loans. So think about them as a guarantor. So that's the other one. You might have somebody who just wants a return on investment and they don't care about equity. Think of that as a place for people on with fixed self-directed IRAs. That's a good place for them. But also, this is a good place for seller financing. So I know this is a little out of the realm of when you meet someone, but just think about the fact that you could use a passive debt investor as a seller who wants to stay in for a few years and he just wants to get a return on his money. Then you want to get them out with a refinance. So you might have somebody that you meet that would like to do that, that just wants to invest short term on a shorter term investment opportunity. The other people that you're probably most often looking for are going to be your passive equity investors. So think about the fact that you've got more than one opportunity when you're talking to prospective investors. So when you're having this first date with your investors, these are good questions. And if you want to create a questionnaire out of this, that's not maybe a bad idea. These are the kinds of things that an investment advisor would ask of a prospective client. So I don't want you to think of yourself as an investment advisor because you're not going to offer advice on which investment is best for this or that investor based on their financial situation, but you are going to have some investment opportunities for them, and you do have an obligation under securities laws to make sure that what you have to offer is suitable for them. So you want to make sure that they have a realistic idea about what kind of returns you might have to offer. You want to talk about what kind of cash flow your deals might generate and make sure that that fits in with what their investment scenario is. Some of them might have concerns about safety. You're going to have to find out if that's one of their criteria. Liquidity. When you get someone into an investment that's going to last for 4 to 7 years, it's not very liquid. And so you need to understand, and they need to understand, that liquidity may not be something that's immediately available to them, that they have to be able to leave their money invested long term until the property is sold. So, and other people might like management control, they might like the prestige. You know, they might like that. So you just have to gauge from your investors what they're looking for and make sure that when you offer them an investment opportunity, you're not wasting their time or yours, and that you're offering things that fit within their investment scenario. So remember, people invest in you. Right? They are more likely to invest in you. There are people that will never read a document that you give to them. You always want to encourage that, but there are people that will do that. So they're going to be looking at you, and they're going to be looking you in the eye and saying, is this guy going to run off with my money? Now, the most important thing that an investor is concerned about is getting their money back. They're less concerned about a return, but they're very concerned with getting their money back. So you need to be able to show them how that's going to happen in the context of your business. If you're doing 506B offerings, after you've had that first date with your investor, you are still not ready to give them offers because the SEC rules that say that you have to have some passage of time. So you can't meet somebody at lunch and offer them a deal right then and there. If you're going to do a 506B offering, you have to have a pre-existing substantive relationship. It means you've met them. You've gone through their investment scenarios, you understand whether or not they're a good fit, you've all decided you're compatible, and then you've had some passage of time. Well, what's happened during that passage of time? Again, think of this like a dating relationship, right? You meet someone at a bar, you go out on a first date, you really hit it off, everybody's excited and happy about the relationship going forward, and then you go away. Well, if you never called them again for another 3 months and then called them out of the blue and said, hey, by the way, you know, I just want to see if you want to get married, they'd probably think you were kind of weird. So let's think about what should happen in a normal dating relationship if you were going to further that relationship. You would continue to follow up with that person. So in your context, you would start to send them your newsletters, invite them to free events, send them a free report, do things to further the relationship with that investor while you allow the passage of time. After that, then you can go ahead and make offers. So one of the hallmarks of when you're able to make offers in these 506B offerings is that you have to be able to have a record-keeping system that shows what you did to develop and maintain that relationship. So that's, we're back to the CRM, the Customer Relations Management Program, that's going to be your place to record all of the contacts that you have with your investors. You can do it yourself on an Excel spreadsheet. You don't have to buy a fancy program. There are multitudes of finance of programs like that available on the internet. So you have to make your own decision on which one you might use and what methods. You can even take pieces of paper and you can just keep notes every time you have contact with someone. You can stick it in a paper file. Doesn't have to be electronic, but you do have to have a record-keeping system that you consistently maintain. Then once you've done that and you can demonstrate that you have a pre-existing relationship, part of the pre-existing relationship is knowing what someone's financial situation is. So you have already asked those questions about whether they're accredited, whether they're sophisticated, and now at that point, after a passage of time, you can begin to make offers. But before you make offers, so make sure that you get that investor questionnaire. Now, are you required by law to have an actual investor questionnaire signed by them in your files? No, you are not. But you need to have that information. So if you didn't get it from them filling out an investor questionnaire, then you should have a form or something else where you filled it out when you asked them those questions, so that you can go back to that and say, well, I did ask them these questions on such and such a date, and these are the answers they gave me. And if you can show that you consistently do that as a part of your normal business practices, then that would become admissible evidence if somebody later said, well, I never told them that. All right, you need to have that suitability conversation, and that suitability is not just financial. Remember, that's also about personality and compatibility. And then you allow the passage of time. So after that, you can make offers. And so what is an offer? This is when you're sending your investment summary out to an investor and saying, here is the current investment opportunity. And then you can get checks. So maintain your relationship with all these means. Use newsletters, email blasts, webinars, live events. You just want to keep touching that investor. But you don't want to do it so frequently that it becomes annoying and they unsubscribe. So you need to make sure that whatever you're providing them with is valuable content. And things not to do. So in a 506C offering where you can advertise, you could freely advertise a seminar where you're going to talk about your deal. That's the only time you would be able to do that, is if you were doing a 506C offering. But remember, that's going to force you to exclude anybody who's not accredited from your offering. So for 506B offerings, you cannot send email blasts. For 506C offerings, you can. And for 506B offerings, you can't post them on your website. But for 506C offerings, you can. So 506B offerings, you cannot stand in front of your local real estate investment association meeting and tell them that you're looking for investors in a multifamily deal. For 506C offerings, you can. So what you should do now, create your marketing materials, set up your website, and your newsletter. Choose your company name and your brand. Work on your conversation starters. Practice them to a bunch of different people until you get one, until you're comfortable with them, that people give you good feedback on it, and you're not stumbling when you're saying it. Prepare educational seminars or reports on topics of interest that are relevant to your types of investment. And then write your investment summary if you're thinking about doing a blind pool. If you're going to be doing a series of specified offerings where you're putting one property under contract, you're just raising money one property at a time, then you won't write your investment summary until you have something under contract. And then work with your coach. Work with your coach. When to hire your securities attorney? You're going to hire your securities attorney after you've got the property under contract, you have a purchase and sale agreement, you've physically been to the property, and you reviewed the property financials. Because that's been my experience, that most of the times, anybody who's gone through those three steps, the deal will go forward. Very rarely that it falls apart after that. But until you get that signed purchase and sale agreement, so the LOI is not the time to spend the money to hire a securities attorney. get your purchase and sale agreement first, and those other things. So, you know, you just need to know to use the right tool at the right time. So think about setting up your marketing machine, what that's going to look like. A really great way to do that would be to set up a marketing program and a marketing plan, and write a marketing plan on how you're going to contact your investors and how you're going to maintain relationships with them. And then start building those materials. It will take you time to build those materials, but if you want to be in this business for the long haul, this is the best thing to do. All right, so thank you so much. This ends my segments. I thank Rod for letting me help and teach these two segments, and I hope that the information has been valuable. And let Rod know if you have any questions for me. All right, thank you.
It's very easy when you're learning something new to question yourself, you know, to question your abilities. It's common. And I want to make sure that if limiting beliefs pop into your head, you have the resources to deal with them. That's why I wanted to play this short clip about the power of believing in yourself before we get into Module 8. I hope you enjoy it. Just about anyone that's ever succeeded at anything has had numerous setbacks and even failures on their road to success. And everybody feels fear, or what achievers call stress, at many points in their lives. But what people that believe in themselves do when they get knocked down and they get beat up is they get back up again and they focus on their goals. These are people that believe in their abilities to get back on their feet and make things happen again. Now, if you want to change the world, and I know you do, then you need to master this belief in yourself. The famous French artist Balzac said, "When you doubt your power, you give power to your doubt." You're more powerful than you can possibly imagine. So let's talk about how to tap into that power and strengthen your belief in yourself. There's several things you can do that'll help. You know, one of the most important things is to remember to celebrate the wins, even the small things that you accomplish every day. They're important for you to celebrate. Think about what you've accomplished and be proud of yourself. Realize and be sure to remember that everything that you really give your full attention to, it grows and it improves. It's also very important to watch your self-talk. Be careful what sorts of questions you consistently ask yourself and make sure they empower you. It's so easy for us to get trapped asking ourselves negative questions or making defeatist comments. It's really our natural tendency to focus on the negative. So focusing on positive statements may take some conscious effort and thought, but it's critical to your success. You wouldn't verbally abuse your child or someone close to you, so don't do it to yourself. Maybe you've heard me tell the story about when I was in elementary school and I was smitten by a beautiful girl in my class and how she publicly humiliated me on the playground and how subconsciously it created a negative question in my mind that I carried for years. And that question was, how can I show them I'm good enough? And of course, that presupposed that I wasn't good enough. Many people have these sorts of negative beliefs or phrases or questions that they ask themselves that they may or may not even be consciously aware of. That's why it's so important to give that self-talk your conscious energy and have it be positive. Now, taking action is a powerful way to help you believe in yourself as well. The artist Vincent van Gogh said, "If you hear a voice within you say you cannot paint, then by all means paint, and that voice will be silenced." Take that first step, my friend. Also, make sure that your environment empowers you. For example, when I'm sitting in my office, I can see signs on my wall that I had printed that say, "I am success," or "I am the best in the world at what I do," "I am a business genius." You know, I had these signs printed to help pick me back up when I got knocked down, to remind me to speak positively about myself. Remember, anything you put the words "I am" in front of is an identity statement, and our need to remain consistent with how we identify ourselves is one of the most powerful needs that a human being has. Maybe some of you have seen those YouTube videos where a brilliant parent has their child stand up in front of a mirror and say things like, "I am great," and "everybody loves me," and "I love everybody," and maybe you've seen those. I think they're just incredible. And you know that those children will develop unbelievable belief systems in themselves. And you got to remember the importance of dreaming big and having big goals. Also having compelling reasons why those goals are a must for you, because you're going to get knocked down. And when you get knocked down, and you inevitably will, it's focusing on those goals and why they're so important that'll, you know, cause you to get back up again and help you push through. And remember, guys, be grateful. There's no more powerful emotion on the planet than gratitude. Another great tool to help you remember to believe in yourself when you get knocked down is keeping a gratitude journal, writing down those wins and the things that you're grateful for regularly.
You know, it's a powerful way to remember to believe in yourself. I actually even write down magic moments that happen with myself and my wife and my kids. And remember, as you go into business, you're going to need other people to believe in you. And the only way that's going to happen is for you to believe in yourself and your abilities. And remember, we're all going to feel rejected at times. And it's our belief in ourselves that will help us realize nobody that really knows us at our core could ever really reject us. It's also important to find your true purpose in life, because if you're doing what you love, work is play, and setbacks are just little blips because you're enjoying what you're doing so much. If you're not sure what your true purpose in life is, listen to the episode that I just did about that topic, because it's so important for you to live in your purpose. It's also important for you to remember to stay away from toxic people, because they love to squash dreams. Like preparing a positive environment at home, make sure your close circle is also a positive group. You know, we all have self-doubt, you know, at times, and that's okay. As long as we pull ourselves up, we look in the mirror, and we realize we're a gift from God. Are you going to have setbacks, fall down, and fail occasionally? Sure you are. And it's what you say to yourself regularly, the environment that you've created for yourself, the strength of your purpose in life, and the goals you've set for yourself that'll pick you back up and keep you focused on what's important. So push yourself. Get past your comfort zone. Embrace some uncertainty and live an extraordinary life. I'm Rod Kleef, wishing you incredible passion and massive success in business and in your life.